Welcome to tonight's program. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. This is the Malloy Show, the Malloy program. And we're going to have a good time tonight, Sailor. We have Uncle Mike's Story Corner tonight, a moment with Bob, and the first one of Kay Petrini's report cards. She is our education correspondent. It's rather brief, but brevity is the soul of radio, right? the right wing is really nuts. We know that they are hysterically funny nuts, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. But we've talked so many times about the half-wits that comprise about 95% of the people we hear on mainstream media. I'm not just talking about Fox. I'm talking about all of it. Primarily electronic media. Radio and television is in the sewer. It has been for probably the past 10, 12 years. It's just incredibly in the sewer. Radio and television, if you go there for your news, other than basic facts, like there is a horrible fire about to engulf L.A., or there is a hurricane coming up the coast of Mexico, or the temperature tomorrow morning will be 68 degrees. If you go to television for anything other than basic, observable fact, be careful. Be careful. If you don't, you wind up like the brain-dead bobbleheads who only watch Fox. But the brain-dead bobbleheads who only watch Fox missed out on a real treat yesterday. Or no, it was today. It was today. CNBC's Maria Bartiromo, who is nothing but, I want to say a Wall Street, a whore for Wall Street, but I don't dare because she's female. So I'll call her a pimp for Wall Street. How's that? For the fat cat buddies of hers who have so tanked the economy of this country. Not that it doesn't deserve to be tanked, if you know what I mean. But there's Maria Bartiromo. Who does this program? She's another loudmouth on one of these NBC cable affiliates. Just an absolute braying loudmouth who very seldom gets it right. But earlier today, she had Representative Anthony Weiner, a Democrat of New York, on, she and Weiner were on, Carlos, what's his last name? Westerhouse? What's his name? Watson. Carlos Watson's, bit on CNBC, I guess, or MSNBC. Hell, I don't even know. There are too many NBCs. They all work for the same corporate killer, General Electric. But anyway, there they were. Anthony Weiner, Democrat in New York, who's trying his damnedest to get some health care legislation, or health insurance legislation passed in this country, that may or may not have any, positive effect on how desperately we need this sort of thing in the United States. But Maria Bartiromo displayed today the kind of gross ignorance that should require CNBC, just out of absolute embarrassment of having this woman on, fire her. Just get rid of her. Now, I don't mean to take her job away. Get her off the air. Send her to a 2-year business course pick a place. They can afford it. Send her to Columbia. Let her go take a 2-year course that includes, well, you can decide for yourself. Bartiromo. At one point, what I'm going to play for you, she was critical of the government-managed healthcare system in the United Kingdom. See, once again, they go for the UK. And she says, or she asks Weiner, how do I know the quality of health care in the United States is not going to suffer with a public option? And Representative Weiner reminded her that there already is government-managed health care in the United States, namely Medicare, the system created for Americans 65 years and older, and that patients with Medicare report very high satisfaction rates. Now, I want you to listen to this exchange. Are you ready? Here we go.
The United States of America, 40% of all tax dollars go through a public plan. Ask your parent or grandparent, ask your neighbor whether they're satisfied with Medicare. Now, there's a funding problem, but the quality of care is terrific. You get complete choice. You go anywhere you want.
Don't use it. You don't have it.
Because I'm not 65, I would love it.
Yeah, come on. You have a better health plan than everybody out there.
First of all, that is 100% not true, and I have to stop you there. Federal employees, from the janitors to congressmen, have a government plan that is okay. I wouldn't complain about it. I want the cheapest plan because I'm young, I'm healthy. Medicare for someone age 45, I would take it in a beat, and frankly, so would you, because it's an excellent plan. And if you don't believe it, ask anyone who's on Medicare.
Okay, go back. I want to play that part again, Kathy. Just play it up until the point where this diphthong says, if Medicare is so good, how come you don't use it? You don't have it. How come you don't have it? Go ahead.
Your parent or grandparent, ask your neighbor whether they're satisfied with Medicare. Now, there's a funding problem, but the quality of care is terrific. You get complete choice. You can go anywhere you want.
You don't have it.
Because I'm not 65.
Oh, my
I would
God.
Love it.
Yeah,
all
come
right.
on. You
yeah, come on. Stop it. All right. Did you hear that? He says, because I'm not 65. And she says, yeah, come on. That's the implication. That's a weak ass answer. Maria Bartiromo, CNBC talking head. Now, this may sound sexist, and if it sounds sexist to you, I frankly don't care, because it's not sexist. Maria Bartiromo is attractive. She is also, as she just demonstrated here, a goddamn airhead. There is nothing between her ears. Why don't you have it, huh? If it's such a good plan. So why do you suppose CNBC has her on the air? Because she's an airhead or because she's cute? What do you think? Do you think CNBC would deliberately put someone on their cable news channel that didn't understand Medicare is for people 65 and older? Or do you think they don't care? NBC doesn't care and just wants another babe to stare out there to attract the male audience. I mean, after all, it is a business channel. And as we all know, women don't listen to the business channel. Hell no, just the boys. So you put Maria Bartiromo out there. And as long as she's not confronted with an inconvenient truth like, you have to be 65 to get Medicare, she's just fine. But take her out of her depth, which is foot and a half. Take her out of her depth where she has to sit there with a member of Congress and a Democrat who says, Maria, we already have a government plan that works damn fine in this country. It's called Medicare. Oh, well, why don't you have it then if it's so good? Wow. You can. Where was this? Crooks and Liars or Media Man? I think it's at Crooks and Liars. And Representative Weiner had to answer her. He tried to walk Bartiromo through it. He said, because I'm not 65. And she was insistent. Yeah, come on. Like, that's not a reason. You're making stuff up, aren't you? Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. So that's the first example of this insanity. I don't want to say. I'm just going to sit here for about 10 seconds while we're getting ready for this break. I don't know how to follow that. I don't know what to say. You know, when you have somebody who makes the rounds, she's on that freak in the morning, which I don't watch anymore. I watch Tom and Jerry cartoons in the morning now. That are recorded at 2 o'clock in the morning on our TiVo, whatever the hell we have. But Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough. Maria is always there. She's always flitting around from this cable channel to that cable channel, as long as they're all owned by NBC. And she doesn't know that Medicare is for people over 60. Come on, Anthony. Why don't you have it if so damn good? Oh, my God.
Talk radio right from the left. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? God, between Maria Bartiromo and the suicider Glenn Beck, who really, really is out there in the ozone. The drug addict who drove himself deaf, you know, the pig man. Who else? Hannity, who likes to hang out at the Bunny Ranch in Reno. Is it Reno? Yeah, I think it's Reno. Outside Reno. Michelle Bachmann. We're going to get to her later. Oh, my God. She wants... No, never mind. You'll just have to wait for it. It is incredible. I also have a piece I want to share with you tonight. I'm going to use it as a story corner, I guess. I don't know if you know Johan Hari, who writes for The Independent of the UK. The Likudnik lobby is always going after him, because when he writes in the UK, when he writes or in the Independent, he, like Robert Fisk, he writes from the standpoint of mercy for the Palestinians, and of course the Likudnik lobby hates that. So he's usually attacked mightily in this country. Whenever any of his work appears in this country, the AIPAC crowd goes after him hammer and tong. And Johan Hari really doesn't give a tinker's damn. He continues to do what he does so well. So we've got that tonight, too. That's Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Also, a moment with Bob that is, you know, as entertainingly weird as ever. So when we come back after the break at the bottom of the hour, though, I want you to think about something during the break. Do you remember who Joseph Mengele was? What you can do, if you like, is do a Wikipedia during the break. Mengele, the angel of death at Auschwitz, Birkenau, was that where this crazy son of a bitch, and he escaped, and he died in his late 70s in, where, Brazil or Argentina or someplace? Dr. Joseph Mengele, you probably remember what he was notorious for, but I've got something about that when we come back after the break. Meantime, from Prairie 2, maybe we should try democracy is the subject line. He writes, Japan has had its first change in government over 50 years as the liberals, led by Yukio Hatoyama, swept to a landslide victory. The man who is about to become Japan's next prime minister condemned what he called U.S.-led market fundamentalism. And he vowed to shield his nation from unrestricted globalism and move Japan toward a regional currency union and away from the unstable U.S. dollar. In an essay published in the Japanese magazine Voice, Mr. Hatoyama wrote that the global economy had, quote, damaged traditional economic activities, end quote, while market fundamentalism had destroyed what he called local communities. And he cited the decisions by Junichiro Koizumi, the former prime minister, to privatize Japan's post office and other government functions. He wrote in this article, quote, we will not implement policies that leave economic activities in areas relating to human lives and safety, such as agriculture, the environment, and medicine, at the mercy of the tides of globalism. Hot damn. End quote. He went on to state a need for better welfare, more child support, and wealth redistribution. Yes, indeed. The sentiment of Japan's voters has been moving in this direction for more than 10 years since the attempt to rescue their economy in the 90s by giving truckloads of money to their large banks. turned out to be a dismal failure. The conservative government, meanwhile, was moving in the opposite direction by allowing American business practices such as importing labor and the use of temp workers to drive down wages. The recent slump led to massive layoffs and, in turn, deportations of ethnic Japanese that had been encouraged to emigrate back to Japan after generations abroad. These layoffs also produced something the Japanese had not seen since the war: homeless people living in the streets. We Americans take these scenes for granted since Reagan dumped the chronically mentally ill at the curb. In this country, the majority of county jail inmates should be mental health patients, and millions of working poor are tucked away in hidden camps or populating parking lots at night. Japanese voters completely replaced their entire government for far less than what we take for granted every day. This is their first real attempt at democracy. Maybe we should try it. Prairie 2. Yeah, you can go to Bruce's website, prairie2.com. In following that election, to the degree that I did, some of the analysis in New York Times was, especially on the editorial page, was fairly incisive, giving someone like moi, who is fundamentally illiterate where it concerns Japanese politics and Japanese economic policies, an idea of what the Japanese people have rejected. They have rejected Reaganism, is what it amounts to. The whole world, or Thatcherism, call it what you want, it originated here in the West. It's being rejected by country after country after country, because it is it not, I should make this a question, is it not abundantly clear, excruciatingly clear, that this kind of predatory capitalism, unbridled capitalism, is destroying everything and producing maniacs like Michelle Bachmann and Maria Bartiromo and the suicider Glenn Beck?
Bang, bang, bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you
cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
Yeah, that used to be an attainable goal. I don't know anymore. 26 before the hour on the Malloy Show. Alice down in Helen Howlers regarding Japan writes, geez, Mike, that guy that just won in Japan is saying all the things that will lead to the corporations and the neocons wanting to drop another A-bomb on them. How dare they criticize the free market? From the holler, Alice. Alice lives way back, so far back in the hills in the Ozarks, you have to truck in daylight, so I've heard. Thanks, Alice. All right, Dr. Joseph Mengele, if you're Jewish, of course, you don't have any problem calling up what you've learned about this monster. If you are not Jewish, hopefully you have equally no difficulty in calling up the memory of this monster. However, there has been a concerted effort in the United States over the past 20 years to minimize the crimes of the Nazi regime, and to try to gloss over the corporatism and the Nazism and the fascism that Hitler represented. You can come to your own conclusions as to why that is, but I would assume that there are a lot of people under the age of 50 who do not have any clue as to what the name Joseph Mengele represents. Before I get to the quick Wikipedia definition, It's worth mentioning that Physicians for Human Rights, I guess you would call them a rights advocacy group, yesterday issued a report, a six-page white paper, blasting health experts for playing what PHR, Physicians for Human Rights, what they called a central role in advising and implementing the CIA's abusive torture techniques used on people in our custody. Now, I assume you're aware that not only were there psychologists and psychiatrists, and psychiatrists, of course, are medical doctors, not only were they present at these torturings, they assisted in the writing of the protocols on how to conduct the torture. It's astonishing. Physicians for Human Rights said in its report, quote, health professionals played a central role in developing, implementing, and providing justification for torture, end quote. The report goes on to say, quote, health professionals in the federal government and psychologist contractors engaged in designing and monitoring harmful interrogation techniques, i.e. torture. Such medical participation in torture is a clear violation of medical ethics, end quote. The report said that the medical experts, again quoting, were complicit in selecting and then rationalizing these methods, whose safety and efficacy in eliciting accurate information have no valid basis in science, end quote. This is how corrupt it's gotten in the United States. Interrogators, of course, as you know, the people doing the torturing or the questioning were said to have used a wide range of techniques against anybody that they happened to sweep up. Mainstream media always refers to them as Al-Qaeda members or suspected terrorists, which is a bunch of goddamn lies. They had no idea who these people were. They didn't bust into Al-Qaeda training camps and capture them. They didn't catch them with a dynamite strapped to their bodies. These were people that were handed over by people who had ulterior motives, not the least of which was to get rid of their enemies so they could go ahead and continue the rape and pillage in Afghanistan or Iraq or wherever. So it thoroughly pisses me off when I see these detainees. Look, I don't know. Maybe some of the detainees are goddamn mass murderers. Okay, let's find out in the court of law. But until there's something provided, they are innocent of everything. But we're supposed to take the government's word for it. The CIA word for it. And the government, the Bush government's word for it. Not now, not ever. Physical threats, mock executions, cutting off, what's this artery in your neck? Carotid artery, so the detainees would lose consciousness. Using wire brushes to scrub a detainee's skin raw, and more. Physicians for Human Rights warned that such spy agency techniques and the monitoring by doctors to gauge the effectiveness, quote, approaches unlawful experimentation on human subjects, end quote. Unlawful experimentation on human subjects. Bingo? Dr. Joseph Mengele was a German SS officer and a physician in the Nazi concentration camp Auschwitz-Birkenau. He held two earned doctorates, one in anthropology from Munich University and one in medicine from Frankfurt University. He gained notoriety for being one of the SS physicians who supervised the selection of arriving transports of prisoners, determining who is to be killed instantly and who is to become a forced laborer, and for performing human experiments on camp inmates, amongst whom Mengele was known as the Angel of Death, because when the Jews and the gays and the socialists and the gypsies or the Roma, but mostly the Jews, when they were removed from the cattle cars at Auschwitz-Birkenau, there would be Mengele with his white lab coat, with his arms up, directing this person that way, this person that way, giving the impression of wings flapping, white wings, hence the angel of death. Physicians for Human Rights goes on to say, well, the report's lead author, medical advisor Scott Allen, said, quote, medical doctors and psychologists colluded with the CIA to keep observational records about waterboarding and other torture which approaches unethical and unlawful human experimentation. He goes on to say that by standing up to monitor the effects of acts such as waterboarding on detainees, the health professionals were, quote, laying a foundation for U.S. government lawyers to rationalize the CIA's illegal torture program, end quote. So do you understand what that means? It means that these physicians, these psychologists, these psychiatrists, I don't care what they were in the health field. They were there to gauge how much torture a prisoner could be taken, could take. To notify the torturers when the torture could resume, to take notes for future use, and to provide a foundational defense if and when these filthy Nazi sons of bitches were ever brought to trial. That's one thing they learned the CIA did about Nuremberg. Have your defense in order. Don't just go in the dock the way these dumb goddamn Nazis did and not be able to defend yourself, huh? You gotta say more than we hated the Jews. You gotta say more than the Jews are part of an international cabal to end Christendom. And now, you gotta say more than the Islamists are there to destroy America. My, my, my. Physicians for Human Rights is urging a separate investigation of the medical experts involved to determine whether, in their words, quote, criminal and unprofessional conduct, end quote, took place. And PHR said those who violated medical ethics rules should lose their license. Son of a bitch. This is the corruption that went on in this country, starting back in under the Bush crime family, when torture became a sanctioned policy of the government. No, I'm not stupid. I understand. As a matter of fact, I've talked about it for 60 years. The CIA had no problem assassinating people, but it was all off the books and quiet and smirky and smuggy and wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, what do you do for a living? I can't tell you. This was official U.S. government policy, official to the point that learned attorneys like John Yoo and Alberto Gonzalez and the rest of these sons of bitches were enlisted to guarantee its legality and, if necessary, to write opinions that would shore it up and give it standing. And this filthy piece of human crap, Dick Cheney, is still wandering around, this rat bastard, talking about how Obama has a lot of audacity to open an investigation, that it's only politics. I hope they get him. I can't tell you how much I hope they get that son of a bitch, Dick Cheney.
mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it's 10 before the hour. I've got an email here from Spike in Pennsylvania. And I don't know if I can read this on the air, Spike. He doesn't use the F word once, but whew. All right. Please understand, all of our female listeners, that Spike is trying to make a point here. And he's going to use some language that may be extremely offensive. As a matter of fact, he starts out by clearing that up. He writes, Gonzo, greetings, Mike. Should you be shocked someone on cable news... Oh, this is about Maria Bartiromo. Should you be shocked someone on cable news is as bright as your local pole dancer? Yeah, sure. Some over-PC'd liberals will be sickened by the language I'm about to use, but I'm sickened by people who do dirty things for chump change. A woman in any town in America that becomes hooked on heroin, meth, or crack will perform sexual acts for small fees. Most will do a great imitation of Monica Lewinsky for less than $30. This corporate escort on CNBC, Bartiromo, well, she is pimping for the people on top. CEOs, CFOs, your typical elitist corporate swine in charge of the economy. Only the street pimp gets no less than $15 of that Lewinsky fee. This dolt on CNBC gets the hooker's share of the reaps for corporate America. Sure, she's worth a few million. They're worth billions upon billions. Forget reverse racism. What about reverse pimpism? And I totally disagree with you on Maria Bartahola's looks. I totally don't find her attractive at all. Speaking as a speaking as a shallow pig, freakishly oversized lips, a nose like Rocky Balboa, and a very annoying voice. No, if I'm going to be a shallow, Republican white male sexist, I'll watch Fox Business Channel's Happy Hour. Have you seen that pile of dog droppings? Wow. The only way I could sit next to one of these types of women is if I were paying her $500 an hour or she was hosting The Price is Right. They do this show in a real New York City bar. So great, heavy background noise, but most watch like me watch it on mute. They have an ugly male shill in the middle of two beauties in short cocktail dresses. Oh, man, it's like Cinemax without the headache from watching it scrambled. Okay, that was a more relevant joke when I was 13. I turned 30 in a few days. But in all seriousness, Maria Bartol Wall Street Ho is nothing more than Glenn Beck with a vagina. Someone whose greatest erotic turn-on is money! Spike in Mount Pocono. Oh, my God. Are we still on the air? Well, there's nothing wrong with saying vagina. There's nothing wrong with saying a hoe. It's nothing wrong with, if he wants to describe her as having freakishly oversized lip. Well, I would disagree a little bit with that, Spike. I mean, I'm Italian, too, and our women have oversized lips. Ow! Oh, my God. I don't know. I appreciate the fact that people listen to this program or not who, people listen to this program who either write crazy stuff like that from the gut or like, was it Doug who sent me the F word laced diatribe the other night that we did on Uncle Mike's Story Corner? I mean, I really do. I'm so sick of bland talk radio, I could scream. So, you know, we try not to do it here, although I realize some nights the program must be excruciatingly boring. But with the kind of people that contribute on a regular basis or irregular basis to this program, I always have the impression that, we attract the people who say enough, you know, the real freaks, the good freaks, the ones that hear this program and say, what in the hell is that? And then respond accordingly. I'm not talking about the right wingers who tell me that you know, they want to rape my daughter, but Jesus will save me if I just get my head out of Kathy's nether regions and be a good, you know, whatever. You know what I'm talking about. The real crazy people that whose letters wind up on our uncensored mailbag video, which, yeah, I know. We're way overdue to put another one up. I'm not talking about the right-wing freaks. The kind of stuff that they write is so old. Oh, my God. I was reading emails like that 5 years ago. I was getting faxes like that 15 years ago and phone calls with that kind of garbage 20 years ago. So, and there's the lack of creativity on these right-wingers who write to me is just astonishing. You know, that's why I go for their mamas. Anytime somebody writes nasty stuff to me, I just call their mother a whore or something and be done with it. Or worse, because I don't play that. You know, I really don't. I was brought up playing the dozens, and most white males don't know what the dozens is. And so when you come back and kneecap them after they write in, somebody, well, you rotten F-word son of a bitch, you know, you're a commie and, you know, you're a pig, and I'll bet your mother is in hell having sex with Satan, you know, stuff like that. Then I just, you know, I immediately just fall back on my childhood where I had a couple of friends who were kind enough to teach me to really, really play the dozens. I mean, right in the gut. Right. Well, right below the gut. You know, you go right for the testes when it gets that hard, that difficult, that intense. You just go for it. So if any of those guys out there who years and years ago said to me, Malloy, we're going to have to teach you how to play the dozens. I just want to thank you. I just want to thank you. We'll be back after the break. I hope you will, too. Welcome back. 6 and a half past the hour. This is the Malloy program. We're about to share with you a little bit of Michelle Bachmann's blood pact. This woman is, you think Beck is crazy? You think Glenn Beck is out of his crawl space? Michelle Bachmann almost makes Beck look, well, no, I was going to say almost makes him look sane. It's impossible. Speaking of Glenn Beck, can you play that Michael Moore thing for me again? There's a reason, but I want you to hear this again. Go ahead.
I'm thinking about killing Michael Moore, and I'm wondering if I could kill him myself or if I would need to hire somebody to do it. Well, I think I could. I think he could be looking me in the eye. You know?
Yeah.
And I could just be choking the life out.
Sure.
Is this wrong?
No,
I wouldn't. I stopped wearing my What Would Jesus Band Do, and I've lost the all sense of right and wrong now. I used to be able to say, yeah, I'd kill Michael Moore, and then I'd see the little band, What Would Jesus Do? And then I'd realize, oh, he wouldn't kill Michael Moore. At least it wouldn't choke him to death, and, you know. Well, I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, you and Jesus, I mean, you could become the gruesome twosome and go out and murder people. Here's some more Glenn Beck. The reason I want you to hear this, you know, a lot of people, when I play that and I said, well, Beck is obviously heading for a nervous breakdown and he's going to kill himself because it runs in his family. If he does it, I hope he does it on television. And dweeb who is a right-wing blogger who wants to have my baby so bad he can hardly stand it. He wants me to do him and make him pregnant. And I'm sorry, I'm too old for it now. But he put this out so that the real, you know, tongue swallowers over at Free Republic and what's the other one? Newsmax, you know, so they could all listen to what the guy who wants to have my baby put out there, and they could sit there and play with themselves. I don't know what it is about me that I attract heterosexual men who want to have my baby. I don't get that, you know. Gay men look at me and say, "Hey, Mike." But so many of these heterosexual men, they just obviously want me to do them. And I don't, oh man. And they all seem to be on Newsmax and Free Republic and the little dweeb who writes this blog. So anyway, when we first played the Glenn Beck piece about wanting to murder Michael Moore, it stirred up, tens and tens of people who wrote to me and said, "Well, you son of a bitch, you know." The usual right-wing stuff. Okay, here's another Glenn Beck. Let's just play the whole thing. This runs a minute 50. Listen to this.
This is Glenn Beck show. Yeah, maybe play it. He's in a mood.
I'm a Democrat. I cannot believe that you are talking the way you're talking after all the things that you have said. I think you're pulling the wool over everybody's eyes. I've never heard anybody say meaner things than you do.
Get off my phone, you evil little bitch.
Welcome to the program. My name is Glenn Beck. I have a feeling this show today is either going to be one for the trash can or the archives. I've been sitting here for the last few minutes trying to come up with a list of people that I want to kill with a shovel. People that I just like to whack over the head with a shovel. But somebody actually wrote in a letter to the editor and said that I wanted to kill Daniel Roof for his editorial, which I believe I may have said. But how many people have I said, let's kill with a shovel, huh? How many people have I said, let's light them up and shoot them in the head? I think quite a few. You know, everybody who has a stinking opinion now seems to be an extremist. There doesn't seem to be anybody that actually makes sense that can get any face time on television. You know, it's all people like Jesse Jackson or Charles Rangel. Man, that guy, there's a guy. Hey, there's where we start. Charles Rangel, do you have the sound effects for me? If we're going to do let's kill people with a shovel, let's do it the right way.
And now, people we'd like to beat to death with a shovel.
Charlie Rangel.
Listen again for more people we'd like to beat to death with a shovel.
See, I feel better already. There's a time for everything. To every purpose, there is a season. And let me tell you, baby, today, the season is clubbing people over the head with shovels.
That's such wonderful entertainment. Gee, I wonder why Geico pulled out of that. I wonder why 42 advertisers said, we'll pass. In response to a rapidly diminishing number of requests, the Glenn Beck moment the other night where he's standing in front of his wipe-off board.
I told you that we were going to talk about these things. We were going to talk about Obama, the left, internationalists, graft, acorn-style organizations, revolution, and hidden agenda. O-L-I-G-A-R-H. One letter is missing. Why did I select these words? Because acorn selects tides. They all select their words first, and then tie them all together into one word. Oligarch, the one that's missing, is why. I don't know if we're turning into an oligarchy or what we're turning into, but unless you ask why, we're going to transform into something. Ask questions. Now, the second part of this. A few months ago, I told you, you gotta know you're not alone. You gotta know. You gotta unite. Talk to people. I'm tired of being a sheep. I am tired of being a victim. I'm tired of being pushed around.
Well,
you know what?
Moose.
The gloves come off.
Yeah, they
tomorrow.
Do.
Oh. I will give you a plan. I will tell you exactly.
Cuckoo.
The play
place to go, the way you can save your republic.
Straight to hell. Right up Glenn Beck's ass, right? You know that's coming. What is it? Oh, he's going to have a big rally? Is he going to have a big rally? Is that it?
I keep thinking about that movie about, what is it, Being John Malkovich? You know, like the place to go where America... I mean, it's probably some little tiny cave somewhere where Glenn Beck, I don't know, he keeps his word list.
Oh, my God. Whew. All right, enough with the comedy hour. Jesus, that guy is a cartoon character, isn't he? Oh, my God. God. And you know what is even funnier than Glenn? You know, he's figured out a way to milk the terminally stupid for you know, for listeners, which then attracts advertisers. But wait a minute, all the advertisers are gone. Oh, well. But it's because Glenn knows who he's playing to. You know, he's playing to the kind of just astonishingly monumental ignorance. And remember, he wanted to put poison in Nancy Pelosi's glass of wine. This guy is a homicidal maniac. He really is. But since he has suicide in his bloodlines, that's what's going to happen. And again, with all due respect, maybe I'll get another letter from the National Suicide Prevention Organization. Yeah, they sent me a letter.
We think that you might have differences with Mr. Beck, but advocating his suicide on the air is pretty rotten,
you know, or something like that. Which, of course, we never did. I'm convinced it's in his genetic material. I just insist that, like the guy on, remember the anchor guy 30 years ago on television who pulled out a revolver and blew his brains out on a newscast? Sure, that's grim, but this is United States. We blow people's brains out, oh, how many times a day? We torture, we bomb, we firebomb. We're still doing that. We use white phosphorus, you know, Willy Peter, is that what they call it? We use the most brutal means of murdering people who have done nothing to us, but they have our goddamn oil in their country, and we have to get it. We torture. I already said that. So watching Glenn Beck blow his brains out on television would almost be a come down from what we do in this country. I think we ought to see this. You know, during all the years of the Bush crime family, we weren't allowed to see the bodies of American soldiers who are coming home dead because of Bush and Cheney. Yeah, we're not allowed to see that. And any time some intrepid news person decided to go try to cover the war, they had to register with the military. And the military would tell them where they could and couldn't go. Oh, my God. So since we are in the murder business, the global murder business, when Beck does off himself, I'll request it again. Beck, please do it on your television show. Thank you very much.
Conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
Jesus, where did you find that record? Record? Where did you find that bit of audio? 21 past the hour. Michelle Bachman is, I don't know. I think she and Beck ought to get together and produce little demons. I think they would. Yesterday, she delivered a speech with... what's referred to as urgent and violent rhetoric at a gathering sponsored by the Independence Institute in Denver, which isn't about independence at all. It's about Nazism. During what was originally billed as a personal legislative briefing, Bachman got downright biblical when describing her unwavering opposition to health care reform. Are you ready? Where did I steal this from now? Does this come from Crooks and Liars? This is what she said, quote, she's referring to health care reform. She says, this cannot pass. What we have to do today is make a covenant to slit our wrists, be blood brothers on this thing. This will not pass. We will do whatever it takes to make sure this doesn't pass. Right now, we are looking at reaching down the throat and ripping the guts out of freedom, and we may never be able to restore it if we don't man up and take this one on. That's a direct quote. I'm sorry, Kathy's sitting over there looking at me. Their eyes are about the size of coffee saucers. According to the Colorado Independent, which I'm going to quote in a minute, Bachman said, "You're quote, you're either for us or against us on this issue," and she bragged about being the country's second most hated Republican woman, you know, after Palin or whatever. But, yeah, that's a direct quote. She went on to say, this is according to the Colorado Independent, that you can find online. She warned the people, a cheering audience at this Independence, what is it, the Independence Institute. Don't you love the names? These son of a bitches are all about slavery. They're about wage slavery. They're about feudalism. The only people the Independence Institute wants to be independent are the top 0.1%. The rest of us are to be totally dependent on their kindness. But anyway, she had that audience cheering. She railed against the dangers of health care reform, warning that that proposal and the so-called cap and trade, quote, have the strength to destroy this country forever. That's a quote. She said in her remarks, something is way crazy out there. That's a quote. Jesus Christ. As the Colorado Independent says, at times Bachman's legislative briefing sounded more like the plot of a slasher movie. She said, hey, let me quote it for you again. Right now we are looking at reaching down the throat and ripping the guts out of freedom. We may never be able to restore if we don't man up. Man up? And take this one on. You know, there are certain phrases that when you first hear them, you go, oh, Jesus, no, please, 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 because you know what's going to happen. All of a sudden it slips into the vernacular. What is this man up stuff about? Does that mean get an erection? What does man up mean? Does that mean stand up if you're male? Man up. Why not woman up? Why not horse up? Why is it? Oh, oops, be careful there. Man up. What does that mean? Right now, we're looking at reaching down the throat and ripping the guts out of freedom. God damn it. We have to make a blood pact. Good God. She's a Christian, right? Of course. She says, we will do whatever to... what we have to do today is make a covenant to slit our wrists, be blood brothers. How about sisters? What is with Bachman? You want a penis, Michelle? My God. I mean, aren't you satisfied with your own anatomy? Oh, wait a minute. Okay. Gender identity issue. That's what this is. All right, let me change my tone. Michelle, this is not an uncommon situation. As a matter of fact, there are therapies you can go through up to and including surgery. To change your gender. If this is a gender identity issue that you've been struggling with all your life, trust me, you'll get no more, no less understanding than you'll get on this program from any source. But stop fighting it. If you really, really want a penis, if you really, really, really want to man up about things, if you really insist on being a blood brother, if you really want to slit wrists and go through all that stuff, are you a cutter too? Jesus Christ. But if the gender identity issue is a genuine problem, there is help. There really is. Maybe you should check it out. Okay, turn off serious mode. Back to cartoon mode. So Michelle Bachman wants to slit her wrists and be a blood brother to whom or what? Somebody in the Independence Institute? Michelle, you're going to lose your audience. Those people are terrified of blood, especially their own. You know, they don't mind if it's a queer's blood or a colored person's blood or Muslim's blood. But the mere fact that you stood up there and said, let's slit our wrists and become blood brothers? Oh, my. Michelle Bachmann. Michelle Bachmann. Oh, she has a proposal to fix the healthcare system. I'll tell you what it is when we come back. Oh, yeah, it's real genius stuff. It's the kind of stuff that you'd expect from, I don't know, Paul Harvey. Yeah, I know he's dead. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, Paul writes in regarding the expression man up. Mike, that expression comes from basketball. It basically means to play some defense and don't get intimidated. Over the last few years, it's basically used to say show some balls, stop being weak. I used it a few times when I emailed the White House and told Obama and the Democrats to man up. Paul. Thank you, Paul. I just don't like man up. All right, it's time once again. Yes, it is. Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Gather around, boys and girls. Get all snuggly. It's a little chilly here in the foothills of North Georgia Mountains tonight. Perfect night for some hot chocolate and Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Tonight's story comes from Johann Hari, who writes about Republicans, religion, and the triumph of unreason. How do they train themselves to be so impervious to reality? Something strange has happened in America in the 9 months since Barack Obama was elected. It has been best summarized by the comedian Bill Maher, who said, quote, the Democrats have moved to the right and the Republicans have moved to a mental hospital, end quote. The election of Obama, a black man with an anti-conservative message, as a successor to George W. Bush, has scrambled the core American right's view of their country. In their gut, they saw the U.S. as a white-skinned, right-wing nation forever shaped like Sarah Palin. When this image was repudiated by a majority of Americans in a massive landslide, it simply didn't compute. How could this have happened? How could the cry of drill, baby, drill have been beaten by a supposedly big government black guy? So a streak that has always been there in the American right's worldview to deny reality and argue against a demonic phantasm of their own has swollen. Now it is all they can see. Since Obama's rise, the U.S. right has been skipping frantically from one fantasy to another like a person in the throes of a mental breakdown. It started when he claimed he was a secret Muslim and at the same time that he was a member of a black nationalist church that hated white people. Then once these arguments were rejected and Obama won, they began to argue that he was born in Kenya and secretly smuggled into the United States as a baby, and the Hawaiian authorities conspired to fake his U.S. birth certificate. So he's ineligible to rule, and the office of the president should pass to, well, you know, the Republican runner-up, John McCain. These aren't fringe phenomena. A Research 200 poll found that a majority of Republicans and Southerners say Obama wasn't born in the U.S. or aren't sure. A steady stream of Republican congressmen have been jabbering that Obama has questions to answer. And no amount of hard evidence can pierce this conviction. This trend has reached its apotheosis this summer, with the Republican Party now claiming en masse that Obama wants to set up death panels to euthanize the old and disabled. Yes, Sarah Palin really has claimed with a straight face that Barack Obama wants to kill her baby. Here's what's actually happening. The U.S. is the only major industrialized country that does not provide regular health care to all its citizens. Instead, they are required to provide for themselves, and 50 million people can't afford the insurance. As a result, 18,000 U.S. citizens die every year needlessly because they can't access the care they require. That's equivalent to 6 9/11s every year, year after year. Yet the Republicans have accused the Democrats, who are trying to stop all this death by extending health care, of being killers. And they have successfully managed to put them on the defensive. Now, every conversation about health care has to begin with a Democrat explaining at great length that no, they are not in favor of killing the elderly, while Republicans get away with defending a status quo that kills 18,000 people a year. The increasingly frenzied claims have become so detached from reality that they often seem like black comedy. The right-wing magazine U.S. Investors Daily claimed that if Stephen Hawking had been British, he would have been allowed to die at birth by its socialist healthcare system. Hawking responded with a polite cough that he is British and, quote, I wouldn't be here without the National Health Service, end quote. This tendency to simply deny inconvenient facts and invent a fantasy world isn't new. It's only becoming more heightened. It ran through the Bush years like a dash of bourbon in water. When it became clear that Saddam had no weapons of mass destruction, the U.S. right simply claimed they had been shipped to Syria. When the scientific evidence for man-made global warming became unanswerable, they claimed, as one Republican congressman put it, that it was the greatest hoax in human history, and that all the world's climatologists were liars. The American media then presents itself as an umpire between the rival sides, as if they both had evidence behind them. One of Bush's former advisors, David Kuo, has said the president and Karl Rove would mock evangelicals as nuts as soon as they left the Oval Office. But the ordinary Republican base believes this stuff. They're being tricked into opposing their own interests through false fears and invented demons. Last week, one of the Republicans sent to disrupt a healthcare town hall started a fight and was injured and then complained he had no health insurance. I didn't laugh. I wanted to weep. How do they train themselves to be so impervious to reality? It begins, I suspect, with religion. They are taught from a young age that it is good to have faith, which is by definition a belief without any evidence to back it up. You don't have faith that Australia exists or that fire burns. You have evidence. You only need faith to believe the untrue or unprovable. Indeed, they are taught that faith is the highest aspiration and most noble cause. Is it any surprise this then percolates into their political views? Faith-based thinking spreads and contaminates the rational. However strange it seems, the Republican Party really is spinning off into a bizarre cult that believes Barack Obama is a baby killer, plotting to build death panels for the grannies of America. Their new slogan should be, "Shrill, baby, shrill." Seemingly unending series of Uncle Mike's Story Corner, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's episode was entitled Republicans, Religion, and the Triumph of Unreason by Johan Hari, who writes for the Independent of the UK. Ah. Slit our wrists. We've got to slit our wrists in order to stop healthcare. I promised Bachman has her own set of proposals to fix the hideously deficient and corrupt criminal so-called health insurance system in this country that only makes people who are at the top of that bloody heap fabulously wealthy, while 18,000 Americans die every year because they can't get simple health care. Son of a bitch. And these people have the audacity to call a death panel anything that would appear in the health care plan as written by Congress so far. These miserable right-wing sons of bitches. I have had my belly full of these people. I have. Anyway, here's Obama's solution to solve the health insurance problem. First, erase the boundaries around every single state when it comes to health care, which will enable consumers to purchase insurance across state lines. Woo! Boy, that'll help! Two, increase the use of health savings accounts and allow everyone to take full deductibility of all medical expenses, including insurance premiums. Oh, another winning idea. One problem, Michelle, where in the hell are they going to get the money, you dumbass? You know what the unemployment rate in this country is, Michelle? It's about 28%, isn't it? Huh? Oh, and number three, throw in tort reform. Got to stop those people from suing when there's a malpractice, a legitimate malpractice case involved.
Oh, so your left kidney was supposed to come out? Oh, son of a bitch. I thought it was the right. Uh-huh. Oh, and your left one is the diseased one. Oh, my God. That means what? Oh, that's right. You're going to need a kidney transplant now. Oh, Jesus. Well, here, we'll put you on the list. It only costs you about $75,000. What? You want to sue me? For what?
She added, quote, do a few other tweaks and you're there. The whole crisis is gone, end quote. Michelle Bachmann is as insane as Glenn Beck. I mean, it's obvious. Why are people in Minnesota sending this insane person to do whatever she does in Congress? Do you people in her district not understand what a representative is? Do you want your representative suggesting that people slit their wrists and become blood brothers and man up in order to defeat a proposal to insure the uninsured in this country? Jesus Christ, I thought all the raving, dribbling, drooling maniacs were here in the South. Boy, was I wrong!
I've got a cold 45 in here with me. I'll scare off intruders in my fatigues, black jacket, and army boots. My neck is red, my collar blue. I like it that way. I don't hear liberals talking to me. I don't see things their way.
Truth seekers, gather around the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. You folks are just too sharp tonight by a factor of 1,000. Rasta man wrote into me and said, isn't slitting your wrists a sin? Isn't Michelle Bachmann advocating a very serious one? Rasta man says, Leviticus 19 says you shall make no mark upon your body. So I did a little research during the break. It is the, Leviticus chapter 19, the third book of Moses, called Leviticus chapter 19. It's actually verse 28. This is where the verses are only one sentence, well, one line, because this is the sky, the cloud being really laying it down. I mean, like, you know, if you're going to be a Jew, this is what you have to do. Number 28, ye shall not make any cuttings in your flesh, nor print any marks upon you. I am the Lord. Woo, Michelle, your ass is doomed, baby. You better go back and read your Bible. My goodness, I keep a Bible right here in the studio. Right here, look, here it is. Now, granted, it's the King James, but you shall not make any cuttings in your flesh, nor print any marks upon you. I am the Lord. All you people out there who are tattooed, got bad news for you too. Oh my God. And Bob in Miami, regarding faith, you know what Johann Hari wrote about how this country is in truly caught in an asylum right now, and the Republicans have faith-based politics. Bob quotes from Pudd'nhead Wilson's calendar, written by Mark Twain, of course. following the equator. It says this. There are those who scoff at the schoolboy, calling him frivolous and shallow. Yet it was the schoolboy who said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. Gotta love Mark Twain. Gotta love Mark Twain. And again, if you really want to enjoy some Twain that you might not be familiar with sometime, go to find Letters to the Earth, Letters from the Earth, The Damned Human Race, Eve's Diary, Adam's Diary, Methuselah's Diary, all written by Twain. It's just, not only is it acerbically funny all the way down to the bone, but it is some of the finest examples of debunking religious mythology that I've ever come across. As you know, Twain did not approach things from a highbrow intellectual level, although beneath the vernacular that he used was just that, a kind of understanding that, you know, Twain was a genius, obviously, and he reduced it so that common folk at the turn of the 20th century could understand what he was trying to say. And common folk like me could understand it much later. This happened in Texas. There's a article in the Current New Yorker about a man who was executed in Texas in 2004 for deliberately setting a fire that killed his three small children. Bob Herbert wrote about it today in the New York Times. And now rigorous scientific analysis has shown that there was no evidence that the fire was a result of arson. In other words, it was an accident. No crime had occurred. Nothing. Cameron Todd Willingham, who refused to accept a guilty plea that would have spared his life and who insisted until his last painful breath that he was innocent, had in fact been telling the truth all along. This is a particularly disturbing story to me, being a father of young children. The fire broke out on the morning of December 23rd, 1991. Willingham was awakened by the cries of his two-year-old daughter, Amber. Also in the house were his twin-year-old girls, Carmen and Cameron. The family was poor, and Willingham's wife, Stacy, had gone out to pick up a Christmas present for the children from the Salvation Army store. Willingham said he tried to rescue the kids, but was driven back by smoke and flames. At one point, his hair caught fire. As the heat intensified, the windows of the children's room exploded, and flames leapt out. Willingham, who was 23 at the time, had to be restrained and eventually handcuffed as he tried again and again to get into the room. There was no reason to believe at first that the fire was anything other than a horrible accident, but fire investigators, moving slowly through the ruined house, began seeing things, not unlike someone viewing a Rorschach pattern, that they interpreted as evidence of arson. And it goes on and on. With no real motive in sight, the local district attorney was quoted as saying, quote, the children were interfering with his beer drinking and dart throwing, end quote. He was arrested and charged with capital murder. When official suspicion fell on the father, eyewitness testimony began to change. Whereas initially he was described as by neighbors as screaming and hysterical, my babies are burning up, and desperate to have the children saved, he now was described as behaving oddly and not having made enough of an effort to get to the girls. And you could have almost guaranteed that a jailhouse snitch would emerge. They almost always do. This time his name was Johnny Webb, a guy with a lengthy arrest record who would later admit to being mentally impaired and on medication, started taking illegal drugs at the age of 9. The jury took barely an hour to return a guilty verdict, and Willingham was sentenced to death. He remained on death row for 12 years, but it was only in the weeks leading up to his execution that convincing scientific evidence of his innocence began to emerge. A renowned scientist and arson investigator, Gerald Hurst, educated at Cambridge and widely recognized as a brilliant chemist, reviewed the evidence in the Willingham case and began systematically knocking down every indication of arson. The authorities in Texas were unmoved. Willingham was executed by lethal injection on February 17, 2004. Now comes a report on this case from another noted scientist, Craig Baylor, who was hired by a special commission established by the state of Texas to investigate errors and misconduct in the handling of forensic evidence. The report is devastating. There was absolutely no scientific basis for determining that the fire was arson. No basis at all. Mr. Baylor added that the state fire marshal who investigated the case and testified against Willingham, quote, seems to be wholly without any realistic understanding of fires, end quote. This is one of the reasons that I, and probably you, remain adamant against the death penalty. But the right-wing, Bible-believing, mouth-breathing, crazy Christians say, no, no! That's how you stop me, sons of bitches! This is the Malloy Show. I've got a couple of requests for this Johann Hari's commentary. I don't have the URL. I just printed this off. It's at the Independent of the UK, independent newspaper of the UK. If you do a Google on it, you should be able to find it. I'll try to come up with a link for you and send it to the couple of people that have requested it so far. But until we start providing that, you know, it'd be best if you did your own research. And I know that's a pain in the butt, but it's just hard to do during the program here. We have Kay Petrini, first little piece here. It's a little one tonight. She had sent me something else, but I'm going to put this one in tonight, and then we'll get to the other one later on. Kay is our education affairs correspondent.
Teach your children well.
Is that Kay's music?
As their fathers held.
Oh, okay.
They'll slowly go by and feed them on your dreams.
All right. The one they fix. She titles it Steinbeck and T-shirts.
The one you know by.
Kay writes, Mike, I'm buried under papers to grade. But I wanted to respond to Richard in Portland's question last night regarding whether Steinbeck is still being taught in the schools. The kids I teach are familiar with Steinbeck's work from their English classes and in my U.S. history class. They read parts of The Grapes of Wrath and our unit on the Great Depression. So, yeah, some kids continue to learn this material, and there are always a few who immediately make the connection between that time period and our own. So maybe there's some hope? Regarding the Missouri school district's banning of the so-called evolution T-shirt, in my opinion, this is just one more consequence of the relentless push for more standardized testing in the schools. The contempt shown towards science, social science, the arts, and physical education is palpable in the world of drill and kill. Combine this with the influence of creationists whose goal is for science to disappear from the curriculum and be replaced by Bible study, and you can see where we're headed. I don't hold out much hope that Obama's education secretary, Arne Duncan, is going to change course anytime soon. K.
Them on your dreams. The one they fix. The one you know by. Don't you ever ask them.
It's about 10 past the hour. Prairie 2 says, regarding real tort reform, if you had single payer, tort reform, one of Michelle Bachmann's harebrained ideas, her man-up ideas, her bloodletting ideas. Jesus, what a weird woman. She would, have lots of tort reform. In other words, where people who lost their healthy kidney couldn't do anything. Prairie 2 points out the obvious. If you had single payer or anything like it, personal injury lawsuits and medical malpractice judgments would fade to insignificance, since the bulk of such judgments revolve around anticipating lifelong medical expenses, regardless of what the ultimate cost turns out to be. And if you threw in disability coverage, you could do away with trial lawyers for everything but the most egregious cases that should be handled anyway by the DA. Good point. That's an excellent point. No need for the I guess I would end those commercials on television too. Oh my God, I'm home a lot during the day, and I will sometimes flip on television, CNN, MSNBC, or not, you know, the Weather Channel, and these commercials that are run by law firms about everything. Dear God, I mean, if you've ever taken anything, if you've ever taken ibuprofen, they have proof that it caused, I don't know, your some sort of sexual dysfunction, or your ear to fall off, or big open running sores on your feet, whatever. And they want to represent you, you know, so that you can get the money that you're due. No, I'm not going to get into an anti-attorney tirade, because, you know, my answer to people who bust up on trial lawyers is, yeah, okay, well, the next time you need one, I don't know, call a plumber? I don't think so. So, but the, you know, just like there are crazy talk show hosts who are probably going to commit suicide eventually on the air, and there are other talk show hosts who do drugs so badly they drive themselves deaf. And there are other talk show hosts who say that autistic children are just faking it and should be slapped around a little bit and told to go to their room. There are crazy lawyers too, right? Of course. And those are the ones that put these hideous commercials up. Oh my God. Even fishing for people to sign up for lawsuits regarding mesothelioma, which seems to be the big one right now. God knows that there are people who are egregiously injured and who are going to die, and family members who are survivors of these people who have died because of industrial pollution that the companies knew was killing the workers. But workers are expendable. They always have been. Serfs are expendable. Slaves are expendable. Workers are expendable. So to say that those people don't deserve damages is ridiculous, and I'm not saying that. You know what I'm talking about. Have you ever taken an aspirin? Have you then passed any blood? Well, guess what? You know, that kind of stuff. Bob Kincaid, whose program follows this one on the internet, on the web, every night, Monday through Friday. If you haven't tuned in, you should. Just stay where you are. If you're listening on the web, I realize it gets a little bit late, but if you're on the West Coast, what the hell? You know, you're just starting to party. Bob Kincaid, who is with Head On Radio Network. I love that. He just sent me an email regarding Bachman. He says, Bachman also slurred the Amerindians with that little blood brother business. Remember? That was a heathen Indian ritual of dubious provenance that little boys who went to the nickel movies on Saturday learned, watching Tom Mix, Hopalong Cassidy, and Roy Rogers. It's one of those practices that Hollywood assured us made us white folks more civilized than them folks who were here first. Sort of an ex post facto justification for the biggest genocide ever to disgrace the planet. From Great White Hopes, who said that the other day, to Blood Brothers, the Republicans are making sure we all damn well understand they're fighting for us white folk. Bob. P.S. Blood Brothers who slit their wrists become dead Blood Brothers real quick. By the way, we all know one is just supposed to slash the palm. Not your wrist. Ignorant women can't even get their metaphors straight. She could screw up a one-car funeral. So tune in. I'm serious. If you haven't listened to Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network, when this program's over, his program right now is 100% web-based, I believe. I hope I'm not saying something. Is he on shortwave? I'm not sure. But it's web-based for all intents and purposes. And stick around. Check it out. Then you say, Jesus, God, I like this guy a lot better than Malloy. Montana. Who'd have thunk it? Montana. Montana is going to rule that assisted suicide is okay according to their state constitution. Huh? There's a guy out there who has brought the case. His name is Robert Baxter. Last year he had lymphocytic leukemia. It was killing him. He, 76-year-old retired truck driver from Billings. He fought, but then he was struggling not for life, but for the right to die with help from his doctor. And guess how this is going to turn out? Stick around. I'll tell you when we come back.
The cops want someone to bust down on Orleans Avenue. Another day, another dollar, another wall, another tower went up where the homeless had their homes. So we pray it was made of different gods as there are flowers, but we call religion our friend. We're so worried about saving our souls, afraid that God will take his toll, that we forget to begin.
C-SPAN, so you don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So in Montana, this man, Robert Baxter, was dying of lymphocytic, is that how you say it, Kathy? Lymphocytic leukemia. And he was struggling the last year of his life, according to the New York Times, not for his life, but for the right to die with help from his doctor. His daughter said in a court affidavit describing her father's final agonized month, quote, he yearned for death, end quote. Now he's dead. However, he is the center of a right to die debate that could make Montana the first state in the country to declare that medical aid in dying is a protected right under state constitution. Yeah, that's right. Montana, the state's highest court, tomorrow will take up Mr. Baxter's claim that a doctor's refusal to help him die violated his rights under Montana's constitution. And lawyers on both sides say the chances are good that the deceased Mr. Baxter will prevail. Now, Washington and Oregon allow physicians to help terminally ill people hasten their deaths. But in those states, the laws were approved by voters in statewide referendums. And neither state's highest court has examined the issue as a constitutional right to die. I bet you Michelle Bachmann is just wetting her underwear tonight with this one, huh? In Montana, this question will be decided by the 7-member state Supreme Court. A lower court ruled in Mr. Baxter's favor last December on the very day that he died. And the state of Montana appealed the ruling, hence the trip to the Supreme Court. Now, according to what I've got here, the legal foundation for both sides of this argument is a libertarian tinctured state constitution written in 1972 at the height of the privacy rights movement. You can find echoes of a righteous era reflected in language about keeping government at bay and maintaining individual autonomy and dignity. The drafters of this constitution declared, quote, the dignity of the human being is inviolable, end quote. And lawyers on both sides say that the Montana Supreme Court has a tradition of interpreting the state constitution with that sentiment in mind, with privacy rights and personal liberty often outweighing other concerns. The court ruled in 1997, for example, that Montana's anti-sodomy laws were unconstitutional invasions of privacy. And it took the U.S. Supreme Court 6 years to reverse one of its own decisions about that issue that had found no such protection for same-sex couples under the U.S. Constitution. And in 1999, the Montana Supreme Court held that a woman's right to choose abortion was protected, including the choice of her medical provider. Montana. Because this case involves only the state constitution, the Montana Supreme Court will have the final word. There will be no appeal possible to the U.S. Supreme Court. Montana already has one of the highest suicide rates in the nation. In a legal case like this one, takes you right out to the frontiers of the human experience, why people choose to die and what role government should play at such moments, if any. It's a huge state with a small population, about 1 million people, in an area more than half the size of Texas. And there are pockets of deep rural life where access to health care in living or dying is severely limited. There is a substantial Amerindian minority with health care and suicide issues of its own. The state solicitor at the Montana Attorney General's office, who will argue the case for the state, said, quote, "There are moral arguments, philosophical arguments on both sides, bioethical arguments on both sides, even medical and public health arguments on both sides." So, people with disabilities, according to some, don't get to live with dignity, let alone die with dignity. That's according to Bob Liston, research associate at the University of Montana, who spent the past 40 years in a wheelchair because of an auto accident. And he's been a passionate advocate for the disabled in arguing for autonomy and respect. Religious divisions, of course. Many Roman Catholics and evangelicals are siding with the state, arguing that the homicide statutes could be weakened if a right to assisted death is affirmed by the court. Some liberal church leaders speak out on behalf of what they say are matters of choice. An Episcopal deacon at a church in Helena who supports the Baxter claim said, quote, "I don't think God created us to be string puppets. If we say that God has given everyone free will, that means God has given you the opportunity to do things right and to do things wrong." So Montana, well, the Montana Supreme Court is scheduled to hear this case tomorrow. I had no idea that Montana had a state constitution that has resulted in what in most of the country are considered progressive, liberal interpretations of the law. A woman does have a right to privacy. A person does have a right to a doctor-assisted suicide. People, consenting adults, do have the right to have adult-to-adult sex any way they want to at the privacy of their own homes. Montana, who'd have thunk it?
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. I got an email. Oh, by the way, if you want to call in, this would be a good time to do it. The number here is 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. Email from Joanne in San Francisco, responding to Prairie 2. Prairie 2, who said tort reform is kind of ridiculous from the standpoint that if we had health insurance reform, people who were grievously injured during a medical procedure would be covered for the rest of their lives with health insurance. But Joanne in San Francisco says it isn't all about the medical costs. She writes, in a lot, maybe in most cases, it's quality of life. Are you listening, Prairie 2? What of all the people who end up consigned to bed or in a wheelchair because of malpractice? What of people whose lives are shortened I don't understand that sentence. What of people whose lives are shortened and what what of people whose lives are shortened and want to stuff as much life into what they have left? We studied a case of a man whose facial nerves were cut, which wasn't the malpractice, but his doctor didn't want to admit it was a problem. So he kept the patient from getting the help that might have saved the nerve. That was malpractice. Half his face looked like it was melted. Shouldn't he get money to punish the doctor and to try to make up for what was done to him and maybe permit him to fill his life in ways that are not open to him now? Please, no crap about beauty skin deep. It changed his life. Those attorneys on radio and television reach people who are mostly not educated and don't realize they can be compensated for what corporations have done to them. Yes, the lawyer gets paid, but the injured person gets compensation that they would not otherwise have gotten. Joanne in San Francisco. Okay, that's a good point. I guess it's just the nature of the commercials that are kind of, I don't know, kind of oily to me. You know what I'm saying? But point taken. Absolutely. Nobody wants to talk tonight? All right. I'll tell you what. Have you got Moment with Bob music? Let's do a Moment with Bob. Not as a default, Bob, but just because I wanted to get to it tonight anyway. Ah, there's the music. Oh. It's time once again for A Moment with Bob. Tonight's Moment with Bob is entitled The Final Catch 22. Hey, Mike, it's been 7 months. How long are we supposed to wait? We endured 8 years of the Bush regime. It seems like all we got out of the last election was a charming, erudite man who is continuing the Bush-Cheney policies. If Obama has a secret plan to unwind the most horrendous policies of the Bush regime, he'd better tell us about it pretty soon. As General Turgidson and Dr. Strangelove said,
Mr. President, we are rapidly approaching a moment of truth, both for ourselves as human beings and for the life of our nation.
We either put the brakes on now or watch the most savage aspects of the American empire rage on. For example, the New York Times the other day, U.S. has rendition to continue, but with more oversight. Human rights advocates condemned the decision, saying that continuing the practice known as rendition would still allow the transfer of prisoners to countries with a history of torture. They said that promises from other countries of humane treatment, called diplomatic assurances, were no protection against abuse. Amrit Singh, a lawyer for the ACLU who tracked rendition cases under Bush, said, quote, it is extremely disappointing that the Obama administration is continuing the Bush administration practice of relying on diplomatic assurances, which have been proven completely ineffective in preventing torture. The task force has proposed a more vigorous monitoring of the treatment of prisoners sent to other countries, but as Amrit Singh said, the usual method of such monitoring, visits from American or allied consular officials, has been ineffective. A Canadian consular official visited Mr. Arar, you remember him, several times, but the prisoner was too frightened to tell him about the torture, a Canadian investigation found. And what did Obama have to say about rendition in his pre-president days? In an article in Foreign Affairs in the summer of 2007, Mr. Obama wrote, to build a better, freer world, we must first behave in ways that reflect the decency and aspirations of the American people. This means ending the practices of shipping away prisoners in the dead of night to be tortured in far-off countries, of detaining thousands without charge or trial, of maintaining a network of secret prisons to jail people beyond the reach of the law. Yeah, I remember that. As health care reform limps to the finish line, Bob writes, and insurance companies lick their lips in anticipation of windfall profits from government subsidies, the LA Times reports The half dozen leading overhaul proposals circulated in Congress would require all citizens to have health insurance, which would guarantee insurers tens of millions of new customers, many of whom would get government subsidies to help pay the company's premiums, end quote. I guess, Bob writes, it's almost time to throw in the towel and admit the corporatocracy's complete dominion over this country. Suffering from terminal naivety as I do, I still can't figure out why the corporatocracy, working through their right-wing media, is trying to destroy Obama the same way they destroyed Clinton. Clinton gave them everything they wanted, a war, globalization through GATT and NAFTA, the repeal of Glass-Steagall. Clinton paved the way for the corporatocracy to reap zillions, but they still did everything short of a bullet in the head to bring him down. Why? Obama certainly has been cooperative. The war is still going on. He went along with the largest transfer of wealth in human history to Wall Street and the banks. What's their problem with Obama? What's all this screeching about? Their team won. They own 99.9% of the media, so there's no real opposition. They own just about everything, and they pretty much control everything else. What's their problem? They won. Liberals lost. Again. Then I reread Catch-22. I think I found a glimmer of an answer. They want everyone to let them off the moral hook they've skewered themselves on. They want our complete capitulation. They want us to tell them that they're okay. And when we don't, I think somewhere deep inside their filth-encrusted souls, they know they've been bad little boys and girls, and it makes them feel a twinge, teeny though it may be, of guilt. And then they scream. Limbaugh, O'Reilly, Beck, and Coulter scream at everything and anything liberal. The final appearance of Catch-22 is when Yossarian finally refuses to fly any more missions. He's hauled up before Colonels Cathcart and Calm and told he will be court-martialed if he does not accept a deal they are proposing. It looks lovely. They're going to promote him, give him another medal, and send him home as a hero to do morale-boosting campaigns and sell war bonds. He'll get what he always wanted. Out! They begin by telling him that there's a catch. Catch-22. That's the easiest part, they claim. But it's the one thing which he eventually finds he cannot do. They want him to like them. And I think, Bob writes, that's what they want us to do. The one thing which we cannot do, they want us to like them, and we won't. It drives them crazy. We won't let them off the hook, even though they have the means, all the money, media and power to do the rotten things they seemingly love to do, and they're going to keep on doing them. We don't like them. Through their mouthpieces, they scream and rant and rave because we somehow thwarted them. They need our imprimatur on the contract so they can say to themselves and their money-grubbing, power-hungry, anti-life, constitution-shredding cohorts, see? We might be the worst mother-beeping bastards of all time, but at least the people we can't stand like us. We know the corporatocracy wants everything. Winston Smith found out exactly what that meant. They won't leave us alone until they own the space between our ears. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, tonight's version, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Reading his stuff exhausts me. He uses so damn many italics. Yeah, I love it. Nora is in Minneapolis, listening on KTN, KTNF. Hey, Nora.
Hey there, Mike. I'm calling to see that you might be interested in hearing about the woman who intends to kick Michelle Bachmann's ass. And she's the Senate Majority Assistant Majority Leader of the Minnesota Senate.
Yeah, who would that be?
Carol Clark is her name.
Did you give Kathy any information on her, how to get in touch with her?
I don't know, but I'm sure there's a website if you look up her name, Google.
All right, wait a second. Well, let Kathy's writing it down. What is it again?
Carol, T-A-R.
Uh-huh.
R-Y-L.
See,
I believe, I'm pretty sure that's the spelling of the first name, and the last name is Clark.
Carol Clark.
And she's extremely coherent and informative, and she appears always on the local news shows to tell about all the stuff they're doing in the Senate. I mean, she's more coherent than me and everything, but...
Well, if Al Franken can do it, probably Carol Clark can do it. We'll look it up. We'll try to get her on. Nora, thanks. We got a break here. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
But when it comes to times like Korea, there's no one more red, white, and blue. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. I vote for the Democratic Party. They want the UN to be strong. I attend all the Pete Seeger concerts. He sure gets me singing those songs. And I'll send all the money you ask for. But don't ask me to come on along. So love me, love me, love me.
It's 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew, Ben Birch, Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kay Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Kathy Bay, who is the producer of this program. Our last caller was talking about, yeah, the woman's name is Terrell, T as in Tom, Terrell Clark, T-A-R-R-Y-L, Clark. If you do a Google on Terrell Clark, you'll get some pretty good information. According to... Channel 5 in Minneapolis, she's going to run against Bachman. It says Terrell Clark, a strong voice to the DFL-controlled Senate. That's the Democrat Farmer Labor. Is that what it is? Yeah, controlled Senate. That was the same group that produced Al Franken. Or not Al Franken. Well, I guess he ran with their backing, but that was Wellstone's... Foundation. Anyway, she's running. She's gained name recognition and an elevated standing in the party, it says here. She is the assistant Senate majority leader in Minnesota. Now, during the 2008 election, Bachman only won by 3 points over a Republican challenger. I think he's Republican. Elwin Tinklenberg. I guess he's another Republican. I don't know. Maybe he's a Dem. I don't know. I have no idea. Tinklenberg says he's considering to run again in 2010, plus the 2006 candidate for lieutenant governor of the Independence Party is going to run. To hell with all that. Check out Terrell Clark, T-A-R-R-Y-L, Clark. C-L-A-R-K, Terrell Clark, and we will make an attempt to book her. This election is coming up next year, and Michelle Bachman needs to be put out to pasture. She really does. She does. I mean, she's a psychopath. She is just crazy, absolutely crazy. And I think I didn't realize her last election was so close. I think the people in the is that the 14th district. I think they've had enough. They had enough crazy. I mean, at some point, even conservatives, sixth congressional district, even conservatives, eventually get enough crazy. Right wingers never do. These crazy Christian, dominionists never do. But Republicans eventually get enough crazy, some of them. No, conservative. Never mind. Bachman's days as a representative from Minnesota, of course, are extremely numbered. You know, you don't align yourself with the most criminal administration in the history of this country and make some of the outrageous, crazy comments this woman has made and expect to be reelected. You don't get reelected. You get replaced. So we'll try to book Terrell Clark. We will indeed. Richard is in West Virginia, Fairmont. Hey, Richard.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey, Mike.
Yes.
I just want to tell you, I was watching Rachel this evening.
Yeah?
She had Tom Ridge on.
Oh, really?
And I think he thought he was going to get away with clearing up, you know, what he said to Chris, you know, about their threat assessment, you know.
Yeah, he said they were politically motivated.
Yeah, well, see, he backed off of it a day or two ago.
Oh, he got the email that said,
yeah.
It was a picture of a severed horse's head. Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Right.
But the thing of it is, Rachel brought him on and asked him a couple of questions, and she asked him to come back, you know. And she really got into it, and I think he got kind of mad, you know.
Oh, yeah?
But she did a good job. You know, she's got an awful good show.
Oh, she does.
I hate it that she's on the same time you are, because I got to listen to your show and watch.
Well, there's a very easy solution.
Yeah.
All right, Richard, here it is. Watch her program and subscribe to the podcast for this program. It costs you 25 cents a show.
I don't have a computer.
Oh, okay.
Well, when I was in Ohio a while back, I give my son money, and his name is the same as mine. So he signed up to get the podcast.
Yeah, okay.
And
I don't mind you taking the first hour to watch Rachel. I really don't.
No, I don't watch at all. I just, I don't watch the commercials, and I don't watch somebody I don't want to see. You know?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But I listen every night. My radio went out last week, and I had to buy a new one. And I had two nights that I couldn't listen.
Yeah.
I've been listening. Well, I started listening. We got the radio to listen to bluegrass music when I was flipping through it and got your, when you was on Air America.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
That's the only station that stays on that, you know. I don't put it on anything else. My wife said to tell you that what could make me, what could you do to make me quit listening, you know?
Yeah, what would that be?
I don't know, because 9 o'clock at night I come upstairs to go to bed, you know?
If I said I'm a Republican, that would make
sense. Well, no, I know you're not going to do that.
No, not.
Yeah, we got the same feeling about all Republicans as you do.
We do indeed. All right, yeah. Listen, Richard, thank you, man. I appreciate you checking in. And if you do want to watch Rachel, that's okay. That's okay. That's all right. You can do that. All right, we're
hey,
about
Richard, sometimes I just watch Rachel and don't listen to the show, so don't feel bad. From the whole first hour in here, just, you know.
It's just about time to go home. Let's go home. All right, start the music. That's good. Thank you. Well, this was certainly a fun evening. Thanks for checking in. Check out Terrell, T-A-R-R-Y-L, Clark. Terrell Clark. I'll see you. And the reason I say that is so you can send her a campaign contribution or donation or I don't know, nothing. Just check it out. See you tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.